So I think the question when we talk about what it means to the students in the African American Culture Center is obviously the simple answer is a lot. But I think Martin Luther King is often a person who, he was not the originator of the civil rights movement. He was not the originator of talking about equality, but he is a person that people often know. But what people often don't know is how radical he was, how he went out of his way to really work with a lot of marginalized communities. Right. So oftentimes when we think of Martin Luther King, we think of the I Have a Dream speech, but right. we don't think of like the Letters from Birmingham Jail speech right. or other speeches that he gave. So when we think of the I Have a Dream speech, often people say, oh, there's this measure of equality. And certainly he cared about a level of equality, but he also made it a point, and I think this is very relevant to the African-American community, is he had a great quote, and I'm paraphrasing. He said something like, it's wrong to tell someone to pull themselves up by their bootstraps for someone who doesn't own a boot.
Right.
And so I think that's really important, too. So he's not just saying, hey, we should all get together and be able to talk with each other. What he's saying is that we have to look at these marginalized communities and we have to rectify it. So we often confuse equality with equity, and I think those are very different. So you can't say, oh, these two people are equal. We actually have to look back and look at the history of what was done to people and look about how we can make that right. So,
and when we commemorate his birthday, do you feel that that's enough to mm-hmm. amplify the work of mm-hmm. the many people you're alluding to but yeah. haven't really mentioned?
Yeah, no, I don't think so, because I often ask students, and we actually are going to have an event about this, so we're going to talk about Martin Luther King, but we're also going to talk about who are the other people who were involved. And oftentimes people can't name them. So if I ask people who someone like Diane Nash is, oftentimes people don't know who that is. Or if I ask people who A. Philip Randolph is, they don't know who that is. But A. Philip Randolph preceded the movement that we're talking about with Martin Luther King Jr.
Right.
So what we want to do is expand beyond this notion of, okay, the civil rights movement happened from 1960 to 1969 and it was done. Right. There were many things that happened before and many things that happened after. And I think that's one thing I want students to really understand is Martin Luther King, one of the things I think he was really great for is not only was he a radical, but he gave us a great way to express unrest. And it wasn't a docile way that people think. So oftentimes people use Martin Luther King as a foil for the movements we have now. But actually Martin Luther King influenced what we had now.
Right.
So if we look at things like the Black Lives Matter movement, actually he pretty much called what was going to happen. Because if you look at a lot of his writing and a lot of his speeches, what he does is he calls out people who are moderates, the people who say, okay, well, we want things to change, but they'll change eventually. Martin Luther King Jr. wasn't someone like that. He was someone who says, this needs to change now. We need to provide equality, equity, and justice for people now. And that's the same thing that a lot of these other movements are speaking of. So it's always interesting to me when people say, well, Martin Luther King wouldn't approve of that. And that, to me, is not the Martin Luther King that I know of and that Martin Luther King, the writings of Martin Luther King and the speeches of Martin Luther King. So,
do you see a historic anchor in Dr. King's call to the white community and President Obama talking about his higher angels, our higher angels,
mm-hmm.
and that movement in the last couple of, you know, like,
yeah.
there was a call to decency. Mm-hmm. Could you speak to that about what Dr. King was so radical in doing?
Yeah, when he talks about when he called out what he called white moderates, and he often said something about how white moderates are often too concerned with law and order and less concerned about justice. So he often mm-hmm. talked about how the law is important when you can, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, this is not exactly what he said, but the law is important because when you're doling out actual justice, when you're treating people with a level of equity. But law and order is not important when you're not treating people with equitability. But he called out white moderates because he said that you're too concerned with the status quo, and you're less concerned about making sure that this law and order actually protects every single person.
Right.
So I think that was often what was called out. He, in the same way he called out white clergy, clergy people, mainly white clergymen at the time, and his letters from Birmingham Jail. So he would say something because they would say, I agree with what you want, but I don't like the message or how you're going about doing it, which is the same right. thing what we say for movements now. And they say, well, I would agree with you, but you're going about it in the wrong way. Can't you think about doing it in a different way?
Right.
We hear that all the time in modern day, but that was the exact same thing they said to Martin Luther King Jr. And he called them out. And that was actually one of the things where they said, well, we agree with the principles you have, but do you really have to block roads? Do you really have to march? Do you really have to cause upheaval? And he said, absolutely, yes. That's something that's really crucial to the movement. And that's the same thing we're hearing now. So that's why it goes back to your question about why is it important to students now, why is it important to the black community? Because Martin Luther King Jr. was one of the many people who said, this is the method we have to do. We have to find a way to get people's attention. We have to find a way to make things inconvenient for others. Because if you don't make things inconvenient for others, oftentimes it allows people to ignore it. And that's kind of his call to white moderates. He says, you can't ignore this. You can't say you agree with me in principle, but actually not put anything, any kind of practical application in.
So then, if there is a sense of comfort that's brought to the current generation of young black students here, mm-hmm. because of the advances put forward by the people that came before them,
sure.
How do we extend that call to embrace discomfort when actually mm-hmm. sort of justice implies comfort?
Yeah, so I think we have a tendency to create a revisionist history. So oftentimes we look at what was the end result, what was the positive result. Right. So oftentimes when people think of Martin Luther King Jr., for instance, they think of, okay, he was there when they signed the Civil Rights Bill. But they don't think of all the grinding that had to happen with all the students, with all the freedom riders, all of the different people who were present. So I think in order to not be complacent, what we have to do is actually look at history as it is and not history as we want it to be presented. In the same way that it's interesting, we talk about MLK Junior Day, which is coming up on Monday. And if you ask the students now, if you ask them, when this was presented, do you think everyone was on board with it? Most people would say, of course they were. But the reality is a lot of people weren't. It took a very long time for this day to even be acknowledged. And I think students need to understand that because oftentimes they look at the end. And that's what happens when you look at the end result. You see, okay, we have this day honoring this person. We have roads named after him. We have all these things named after him. But we don't look at all the number of people, the people who some people admire. So, for instance, people like John McCain voted against having Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Right, I remember.
Yeah, and you have all these other people. Ronald Reagan originally did not want Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So you have all these people who did not want a day honoring this person. So we need to look back and say, okay, this was a person who caused a lot of discomfort. We need to look at the part that causes discomfort and not just the end result. So, and I definitely think that, sorry, this isn't a question you're asking, but yeah. I think one of the things that people need to understand and when we look back at him is his nonviolence was a very radical nonviolence. This notion of not using violence. Yes, he was nonviolent, but that doesn't mean that this shouldn't be equated with weak or docile. And often people think that because they see other people and they say, well, they're being violent. Let's contrast them. But he was very radically nonviolent. And the fact that it wasn't just, oh, we're going to be nonviolent, but we're going to be nonviolent and we're actually going to have things that we do in order to express this nonviolence, to make it very clear to others. So,
sure, but loving
God. Absolutely. I think in one of his writings, he said something like, was Jesus not a radical? Or something like that, yeah. Or extreme. I think he said extremist. He says, was Jesus not an extremist for love? And regardless of where you stand on the religious aspect, right. Religion played a big role for him.
Right.
But he said Jesus was an extremist for love. And when you think of something extreme, we think of something very heightened. And so he also viewed Jesus as a radical as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's why he, when we talk about his religion, his nonviolence, he was very extreme and radical in that regard. So I really think that when we talk about black history, I think it's important that we acknowledge that there's a level, when we talk about blackness, there's a very distinct yeah. culture, but yes. I also think we need to talk about it in the framework of this is very distinct in American culture as well. So a lot of times people will set it aside and say, here's Black History Month, but what we really need right. to do is embed it into history. Say, here's the role that black people, people of color, other marginalized communities too. We need to talk about LGBTQ. We need to talk about things about ability, etc. About how they played a role in history, because we often ignore that. For instance, when we talk about people like James Baldwin, we often talk about James Baldwin through a very, very small scope, but we don't talk about his level of blackness, his LGBT, the fact that he was a gay man, etc. Sorry, I had another answer for that as well. What do we need to do? I think we need to do more. We often have names, and we have names of famous people that we acknowledge. And I think that's really important. But I think we also need to acknowledge what the average, and I don't say average in terms of any kind of pejorative way. I say what the typical African-American family went through and experienced and what they did in their show of resistance. I think that's often what we're missing, because oftentimes we think of, here's a person that was a leader. And because we live in a society that values, I mean, when we talk about gender, we often talk about the men in society. Right. We're not talking about the role that women played, not the famous women and women who were just the average woman in the family household and the role they play. I think if we're really going to commemorate this movement, we need to actually talk about the movement, which isn't Martin Luther King Jr. He was one of the leaders of the movement, but the movement cannot occur unless you have all these other people who are behind them. And we have to be able to talk about the risks they took, the risks that every single day they could lose their job, like they by being involved. Right. Every single day they might not know what they're eating. They gave up so much. When we talk about things like the bus boycott, for instance, we talk about Rosa Parks, we talk about Martin Luther King's role in there, but we don't talk about the average person that said, okay, I might be harmed, I might be injured, but I'm going to walk to work, or I'm going to carpool with someone else, or I'm going to spend that time. We don't talk about that enough. So oftentimes that's why we're able to put the civil rights movement in a little bubble. Instead of talking about what's happening with the family, that every single day they gave up just a little bit, but they didn't have much, but they still gave up a little bit. And I think that's the way we can commemorate, because that's what often happens. We think that, okay, Martin Luther King, he did some speeches, he did some boycotts, and everything was okay. But these movements go back so far. And so oftentimes when we say something like, oh, no one's talking about it, no one's doing anything, there always is someone doing something in the right. movement. We just might not acknowledge them until we have someone who we designate as a leader. And so I think we need to do more with that. I hope that answered that question.
I think in a way, and I think also what came to mind as you were talking was that the civil rights movement isn't over.
Mm-hmm. It's not.
And so we're dangerous when we try to make it history.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate how you bracketed what we seem to think is once LBJ put his name on a few documents, yeah, all of a sudden everything was better.
For sure, yeah.
So what will you be doing on Monday to commemorate Dr. King's birthday?
So since we're not open on Monday, we won't be doing anything on Monday, but we will be doing something on Tuesday, the 22nd. We're going to do is, and we can give you a flyer about it, we're going to talk about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy and how it's been diluted over the years. And that's what we want. That's why I enjoyed the question you asked about what do we want students to know, or what do we want them to take from it? Yeah. Because I think that we've diluted his memory and we've turned Martin Luther King Jr. into kind of a caricature of what Martin Luther King Jr., who he really was. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have it at lunchtime. It's from 12 to 1. We're just going to sit down in the group and we actually want to talk about what Martin Luther King Jr. means to us. And we're going to actually talk about some of the things that are less known about him.
Wonderful.
Which are really important, because oftentimes people don't talk about how he was pretty anti-Vietnam War. We don't talk about that a lot. We also don't talk about how he was not very well liked at the time. Right. It took a very long time for people to really appreciate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And so oftentimes, you know, the notion is, oh, well, people liked him. They knew he was fighting for the good. But we didn't know that. That's revisionist history. In the same way that it was very interesting, how I think the Louisville Airport's going to be named after Muhammad Ali. I felt like I read that somewhere as recently. And like it's the same kind of thing. Now people love him. He's beloved, but back then they did not love him. And so we have so many people in history who we say, okay, we love them now, but we need to talk about what happened to make them not love him. Right. And the fact that what was happening in Memphis, what was happening in Birmingham and Selma, people know about, but they don't know what was happening when he was in Georgia. People don't know what happened when he went north as well.
Right.
Because I think that's really important too, and we're going to talk about that as well. Because we're in the South, because we're in Tennessee, we often focus on what Martin Luther King Jr. did in the South and how he viewed racism in the South. But he also talked about how insidious racism was in the North and in the Midwest as well.